Welcome back, folks, to Rebel Madman Radio here at Republic Broadcasting Network. And again, go to republicbroadcasting.org and network.org and hit that contribute button. Try to help. Let's keep these kind of programs and the other programs going if we can, because we're quickly running out of free speech. But James, a question I have for you, sir.
Yes.
What type, if the South was able to secede, if we had 8, 10, 12 states, you know, as many as wanted to secede, how could we guarantee that the wealthy aristocracy that took over this government in 1787 wouldn't do the same thing with those states?
Well, it's a good question, and of course you would have the exact same enemy. I don't have an answer for that, Mike. I mean, if I could dictate the rules of play, the talk could get very interesting. But yeah, of course. I mean, of course, the enemy, of course, the forces of evil are going to want to subvert and ruin anything that is righteous and decent and wholesome, and then they would be right back at the door, no doubt about it. But I think if you step back and you just look at it, even with what we have to work with in the United States as it stands now, and first of all, if there does come, or when there comes, a balkanization, and I don't know what the catalyst will be, but I think that you already have tens of millions of people who are supporting this idea based upon the system's own polling. And I don't know what will be the catalyst that triggers it. Will it be an economic collapse? Because really the only thing – you can't have a nation. A nation is a people. A nation can sometimes be the same thing as a country, but a nation and a country aren't necessarily the same thing. A nation is a people with the same blood. And sometimes it's used synonymously with a country, but – we're not this country isn't a nation anymore. You've got many different nations living in this country now, fighting, of course, because anytime you have a multicultural and a multi-ethnic society, you're going to have friction, and you have these many different nations that are sort of sorted into the two blocks that we have here politically right now, the red and the blue. And if it's the only thing tying us together, it isn't faith, it isn't language, it isn't heroes, it isn't tradition, culture, folkways, it's none of the things that actually tie us together. We don't have a similar culture. The things that tie together and bind a real nation, we don't have any of that in the United States anymore. Really, the only thing that ties us together now is consumerism and a very shaky economy. So if it is an economic collapse that brings about the balkanization of the United States as we know it now, or if they somehow mismanage the situation between Russia and Ukraine to the point where you get into a nuclear war or something like that, I think that this regime, this empire, people say, well, the Soviet Union was never going to collapse. You know, the Muslims occupied Spain for hundreds of years. That was never going to end. But it does end. It does end, and it will end here. That's just history teaches us that. I mean, you mentioned that earlier in the first hour. We knew what was coming because we looked at the past. But if and when or when it comes, I don't know how, but when, and maybe soon, maybe within this still our lifetimes. I mean, things are getting really, really interesting politically speaking. But it will not be just the old South that secedes. It's not going to be that anymore. I mean, you're going to have Mountain West states. You're going to have Heartland states. You're going to have places like Idaho. You want to talk about secession? I mean, this whole greater Idaho thing, you have counties in Oregon that have already voted to secede from Oregon and join Idaho. So it's not just a Southern thing. I mean, the yearning to be free and to be unshackled from this degenerate woke system that we have, for to use the parlance of our times, that's something that's going to extend beyond the old South, because it's a bigger country now, and there are good people in other parts of the country too that are going to want to be a part of this. So that's what this book's about. And I'm probably not the best spokesman for a book, because I didn't even mention in the last hour before the break how to get it. You can get the book is The Honorable Cause of Free South. The Honorable Cause of Free South. It's a collection of 12 different authors. I'm one of them. And it was edited by Patrick Martin, who's a great guy. And I know he's made some appearances on this network. And you can find it at Amazon.com. You can get it paperback, hardback, or Kindle version, The Honorable Cause of Free South on Amazon. And I've actually got the book in my hand right now. And just reading the paragraph on the back cover, the blurb, collection of 12 essays written by pro-Southern and pro-secession activists. We place into context what it means to be Southern and why that identity is important to us. We explore the idea of secession, how to achieve political and social liberation for our people. And then, you know, I think it's a book that inspires emotion and thought. We want the readers to internalize freedom and independence as the most honorable outcome for a unique people, which is what our people are. I have nothing in common, Mike, with the system, the regime in Washington and in Los Angeles and Chicago and New York, where they allow terrorists to burn down cities. There's no law. There's no order. There's no God. There's nothing we have in common with them. You name the issue. We have nothing in common with the kind of people that are running those cities. And unfortunately, you could say, well, they do their thing, we do our thing, but it's not like that, is it? Because they enforce their will and their traditions on us, whether it be abortion, whether it be transgenderism, and all of that. And it's just, we have to be separate from that. We have no future with that.
Well, James, in my lifetime, I have been fortunate or unfortunate enough to live in 11 different states. And
wow.
I have lived in a lot of southern states. I live in a southern state now, Georgia. Came here from a southern state, Arkansas. Before that, it was Colorado. Before that, it was New Mexico. Before that, it was Arizona. So I've lived in a lot of different states. But here's my question. Well, here's my posit, and you tell me what you think. I believe that the Southern, not the Southern, but the state governments are just as corrupt as the federal government. So how do we deal with that?
Well, I won't say that they're everything we want them to be. I mean, God knows that they're not, but there is a difference now in a state like Tennessee. Now, I can't speak about the inner workings of the various state legislatures, but there is now, I mean, you're looking at, well, this is just another example this week of that they're handing down now in Charlottesville indictments for lighting tiki torches 6 years ago. And as Brad Griffin writes at Occidental Dissent, I mean, this whole thing after the George Floyd riots, at a state and local level, you do have Republican-controlled state legislatures in the South. I mean, Tennessee's one of them that does vary pretty wildly in terms of how it manages the affairs of the state when compared to its counterparts in places like Oregon and California and Minnesota and New York with regard to how they wield power. I mean, even the most worthless cucked out Republican who does nothing but suck up oxygen is better than those people. But here in Tennessee, I mean, here in Tennessee, they just issued a proclamation declaring Confederate History Month. Now, I know that that's nothing in the grand scheme of things. That doesn't reverse the rot or excise any of the cancer or anything like that, but it is a difference in mentality. And I mean, they tried to throw out these bums that were interrupting. That was the whole January 6th. You know, what these people were catching those felony charges for, what they're in jail for the charge was interfering with official government proceeding. All of these, and this, I think it's back to what we're talking about right now, why you cannot live together with these people. There's one rule for the support groups of the regime, and there's one rule for dissidents. So you had the situation, and I'll get back to the point of the various states, but the situation in January 6th, well, they stopped the government from being able to do its business. Well, they stopped it for what? All of what? 4 hours that they finished certifying the election this very same day. But these people are doing hard time, years in jail, in prison for that. But you had here in Tennessee just a couple of weeks ago, these woke, dweebs coming in and doing the exact same thing. They stormed the Tennessee State Capitol building, and they shouted down the official proceedings because, of course, you had the situation where that transvestite shot up the Christian school, and all of these people who were supporting the so-called transgender community, they didn't want it to be about the transgender shooting up the Christians, so they had to make it about gun control. So they went in, and two or three members of the Tennessee State Legislature sort of joined in on that protest, and they prevented the state of Tennessee from doing its business that day. The state of Tennessee expelled these legislators. It became a big national news story. But here's the point, and the point is that in January 6th, when the January 6ers disrupted the federal government, they said this was the biggest threat to our democracy. Now, listen to me, folks. They said what happened on January 6th, because they interrupted for a few hours the certification of the election, or the so-called election, every media outlet said it was the biggest threat to our democracy, quote-unquote, our democracy, since the war between the states. Well, they call it the Civil War. Now, when their people did the exact same thing to stop a conservative state of Tennessee from doing its business, you know what they said? They said, this is what democracy looks like. And it was people stopping the state from doing its business. This is what democracy looks like, and we need to see this every day. And that's what the media itself was saying. So, yeah, how do you live in a system like that? How do you live in a system where up in New York, Alvin Bragg, I mean, you have blue state America arrested the president of red state America and are trying to put him in prison. And Alvin Bragg is the DA up in New York who's brought these charges against Trump. And he said just this week that he's not going to prosecute theft in New York, because that's a crime of poverty, and we need equity, whatever that means. And in Chicago, you had this black Marxist mayor of Chicago who just won his election a few days ago. He said, you know, we're going to defund the police. If you commit a crime, we're going to send a counselor to talk to you. Well, what happened immediately after his election? You had blacks. I mean, that's what they were. It was black mobs. If it was white mobs, I'd say it was white mobs. Point of fact, it was black mobs rioting all over the city of Chicago. And what the mayor said, he said, well, you know, so many of them were young, and we have to be, you know, we have to understand that young people are going to act out sometimes. Act out, hell. There was one white woman who was surrounded, encircled by five rows of blacks, and they were just beating the hell out of her. I don't see, Mike, how we continue to exist as a union with people like that and with government like that. So, yeah, I do think there is a difference in places like Tennessee. Now, is it everything I want it to be? God, no, not even close. But is it a difference than what we're seeing in New York and Chicago and places like that? Yes, I do think so.
Well, let me ask you a question, brother. In your life, what do you need government for?
To get out of the way. Not much.
Well, that, to me, is my point. And, you know, we talk about democracy. You mentioned how these people use democracy. This country was never designed to be a democracy because,
of course,
John Adams said a democracy, there never was a democracy that didn't commit suicide. Thomas Jefferson said democracy was mob rule. Benjamin Franklin said a democracy is two wolves and a chicken deciding what's for dinner. And the wonderful Karl Marx said democracy is the first step to communism.
Well, they were all right. Every single one of those statements is true. And of course, well, I mean, it was Franklin himself. We're a republic if you can keep it. It wasn't a democracy as we understand it. But of course, nobody understands anything anymore, Mike. That's why the work you do is so important. That's what I was saying. People can't even name the belligerents in the world wars or the war between the states. So do they know? I mean, but they hear we're a democracy, but the capital D, I mean, the Washington Post capitalizes democracy as if it's like some sort of a religion now, which I guess political correctness really has become a religion. But I mean, who's supposed to know we're not a democracy? Who even knows what a democracy is? Not the American people. They don't know jack.
Well, James, I would contend that democracy has destroyed us. And every state I've ever lived in, I never chose to live in a big city. I want nothing to do with that. So I have lived in rural areas. Let me tell you, in all of the states I have lived in, the rural areas do not have a voice in their government.
Yeah, that's right.
Because of democracy.
Mean,
yeah,
no, you're right. I mean, you know, you look at, if you look at how, and people say, well, people vote, not land. But people do live in these rural counties. And if you look at the rural counties of even a place like Oregon, which I think Portland would be like the poster city for, you know, this woke Antifa left, radical left wing, anti-white, anti-Christian sort of ideology. Well, the city of Portland is the tail that wags the dog of the entire state of Oregon. If you look at a map of the state of Oregon to see how they voted in each county, really only the city of Portland and where Eugene voted for the Democrat. I mean, most of the state of Oregon voted Republican, but it's just there is a huge difference between cities, rural and urban. Cities versus big cities versus small towns and unincorporated communities. Huge difference, but as you said, those people have no voice, and these states are able to these cities are able to dictate and push their will on the entirety of the state, which is why you see in Oregon the Eastern Oregon trying to secede and join Idaho, and they have had votes on that. I'm not talking about polls; I'm talking about votes, and it'd be so. We are one event away. There is an appetite, Mike, for the idea of secession and taking a full measure that was not there even 10 years ago. Even 10 years ago. I mean, so much has happened in the last 3 years. I'll give you a quick, let's see how much time we got before the half hour. We got about 10 minutes. Let me just give you a quick sort of rundown of all of the things. Why is this happening now? I think that's the question, okay? Why is this happening now? Why now? I mean, because America's been in a decline for, God, I mean, how far back do you want to go? The 1960s, the 1860s? Why now, though? Why all of a sudden are all of these people in favor of entertaining the idea of secession? And I've got a list for you, and this is all things that have happened since just 2020. So consider the following. You've had all of these monuments, these beautiful works of art, so not just the Confederate monuments that have been destroyed by an orgy of mob violence and the actions of left-wing governments. This all-out assault on American heritage that ranges from Robert E. Lee to the Founding Fathers to Catholic priests. Okay, they're all coming down. And in the cities is what you're talking about. There's no protection of these priceless works of art. And Donald Trump and his supporters have been purged from the internet. You know, in many cases, you had the 6 months of nonstop violence and rioting by Antifa and BLM, from the death of George Floyd to the 2020 election. The FBI and the Department of Justice turned a blind eye to all of this criminal violence. The FBI and the DOJ have been weaponized against Trump and his supporters. They've launched an all-out domestic war on terror against whites. The New York Times, as bad as the media has always been, it has gone woke to the point where now it's just a never-ending attack on whites. It's just a constant bombardment in the media. The definition of racism, you know, I wrote a book about that back in 2010.
Racism, schmacism.
It means white person. And now people get it. I mean, the very definition of racism has almost officially been changed to just mean white person and white supremacy and all of that. And you have all of this critical race theory, that an equity language which vilifies whites on the basis of race. Too many people to even count, Mike, have been doxxed and fired and silenced over differences of opinion. And then you had this culmination at the end of the 2020 election, where Donald Trump told his followers that the election was stolen from him, and 70% of them were convinced that it's true. And you have to have that erosion of faith in the system before you're going to want to separate from it. And so that's key. And then the simultaneous push, we've been talking about this, to indoctrinate kids with critical race theory and transgender propaganda from kindergarten onward. And that's just, I mean, it's all sort of just really been on steroids for the last couple of years. And so now you've got to this point where this is where we're at. So what's old is new again. And this idea has come back to public consciousness about separation and divorce from a system that we cannot win in. You cannot win in this system. You cannot get any justice in the courts. The courts are criminally corrupt. Every institution hates you. They hate you and they want you dead. Media, government, academia, I mean, hell, even a lot of the churches now, frankly, all of it, and then some. And so, yeah, what would it look like? Would it be perfect in a separate scenario? I doubt it, but it would be better. And I think if you look at the South and some of these conservative states now, if you think of what the concept of Christian nationalism, you would be better off. You would be better off. It wouldn't be everything we wanted, but it'd be better than the path we're on. And I'd love to see it happen. And again, we wrote a book to help people, you know, further consider these ideas in a sensible and responsible way. And the book is The Honorable Cause of Free South, but not just the South. And you can get it at Amazon. I'm pretty proud of it. It's gotten some good reviews from – I would just here very quickly. I'll let this be my final word. Tom Sunich, who's a former Croatian diplomat, wrote that the book represents a timely sequel to the prose of early Southern agrarians. It should be read twice, not just by aspiring nationalists in America, but also by the larger academic community in Europe and America. And Sasha Rossmuller, who's a writer for a German print magazine, commented that the South is rising again. If a manifesto is needed in order to back up this claim, it has already been written. And he talks about the book being a written work for liberation, because it addresses not only the head, but the heart and the soul. And it's a visionary orientation that's not limited to a nostalgic retrospective, as Sasha wrote. So, we're looking forward to the future with this. But, yes, I think all of those reasons I mentioned is why people are considering it now, whereas even at the dawn of the Trump era, you really didn't have people. They thought that, you know, we'd won. We got Trump in. You know, everything's settled and everything's good again. They know better now.
Well, James, how many people listened to Donald Trump on the campaign trail in Detroit in 2016 when he made the statement, "I consider being the nominee of the party of Lincoln one of the greatest things that has ever happened in my life, and I intend to bring this country and this party back to the principles of Abraham Lincoln"?
Well, you know, of course that's silly. I don't think Trump has good instincts. I don't know if he's necessarily a genius, you know, operating with a genius IQ level. That's pablum. I mean, that's sort of like a stock thing to say, Republican, the party of Lincoln. I mean, the people who vote Republican, especially in the South, were, you know, subjugated by Lincoln, and most of the people who vote Republican live in the South. But that's typical standard fare for what you could expect from a Republican politician. Every state Republican party still has its Lincoln Day dinners and so on and so forth. But on the other hand, I mean, it was Donald Trump and only Donald Trump in my lifetime as an American president who praised Robert E. Lee, who at least said, now, he did, you know, there was always a difference between what Donald Trump said and what Donald Trump was able to do. But he did very vocally, while saying that garbage about Lincoln, also full-throated defense of the names of the Confederate military installations, that the U.S. military installations, these army bases that were named after Confederate generals, and he defended that. So, you know, on one hand he says this about Lincoln, on the other he does say this, and I guarantee you, you would be hard pressed to find a politician on any level of government, all the way down to your town alderman, that would take a public support of the Confederate, you know, these Confederate names on the bases. And he did do that. So, I get it. I mean, I see all things. I see the good and the bad, and I try to put it in the blender and see how it balances out on the scales. But, you know, he did do that too.
Well, here's the thing with me is I didn't trust Trump from the beginning because he was great friends with the Clintons, had been for years, and he had too many connections with the organized crime in New York. I look back at all of his bankruptcies and how he put so many small businessmen out of business. I think he was playing a role. And again, like my buddy Cal Robbins says, what does the good book tell us about double-minded men?
You're right about that. And listen, I mean, you know, the Trump campaign itself threw me under the bus by name. And we interviewed Donald Trump Jr. and he made a ton of news. Oh, my God. So I have a personal gripe with them. But I will say this, in somewhat of a defense, it was because of Trump. I don't think he was playing a role. I think he wanted to win. And he was shrewd enough to say, if I say these things about the border, I can win. And he did. And I think once he won, he wanted to be liked, he wanted to get along, he wanted to do his thing. The media constantly sniped at him, though, and I think it was because every single day the sitting president of the United States being called a racist, a white supremacist, or whatever, it sort of numbed a lot of the American population to those charges. It just said, well, hey, he's a racist, I'm a racist, we're all racist, according to them. There's no way to beat it. You're not going to. And that was what my book was about. But it was because of the system's reaction to Donald Trump that you had all of the things that I mentioned a moment ago that sort of led people to believe that we're going to need a national divorce. That was the system's response to Trump. These BLM riots, they wouldn't have done that with Hillary Clinton in there. I mean, it was all overreaction. They thought he was our avatar. They thought Trump really was a white supremacist and a racist or whatever. And it was because of their overreaction to him and what he really was and what he was really going to do that they started torching these cities and, you know, all of that in protest. And that's led our people to where they are now mentally. And, you know, again, God works in mysterious ways. Yes, I mean, Trump may or may not have been a charlatan. He may, you know, been a varying degree of a charlatan, or maybe he was sincere about this and not this, or maybe he was double-minded, and he was. But with the hand of God, by the hand of God, he used Trump even inadvertently to get the American population, or at least our half of the American population, to where we are now. And because of Trump, the American electorate is so polarized now, I don't think it's ever going back. There is more that separates us now than there was during the war between the states. And it's not even close. And, well, and James, we need that.
Do you know what a PSYOP is?
Yes. But I've heard Sam Bushman would agree with you on that. I don't think he was part of that. I may be wrong. You're smarter than me.
Well, here's the thing. And I said this back in 2016, and I still believe it. The government was in trouble. Their 2012 election had just... there were 90 million eligible voters that stayed home in 2012 because, as the wonderful Judge Napolitano said on Fox News, the only difference between Obama and Mitt Romney is skin pigmentation.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So they had 90 million voters stay home. The government knew, because they had said over and over again, if at least 50% of the voters don't show up, the election is invalid. They had to bring the people back into the election again, so they went after a populist. And everything, I was involved in creating PSYOPs back in the late 60s, early 70s, and through the 70s. And let me tell you something, if there was ever the definition of a perfect PSYOP, it was Donald Trump.
Well, I would only counter with this, and that is the system had everything in hand. It had control and still does of every institution. Everything was going its way. Why throw a cog into the machinery there that could potentially get out of control? Everybody was asleep. Like you said, everybody was asleep. They barely voted because there was no difference between the candidates. Everything was going their way. They had complete control, and the people weren't really wise to their dispossession. Oh. Now they are. I don't know. It's something to consider.
Okay, hold on, buddy. You taking off now?
Yeah, I got to get set up for the political cesspool, but I love you, Mike. You'll be on with us next week. The Honorable Calls of Free South at Amazon. Thank you for the time.
You can get it at Dixie Republic, too.
Damn right.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Much as it hurts, I don't think we have all of the rebels that a lot of people think we have. I don't think we have the conviction. I don't think we have the courage that those brave men did in the South in 1861. I don't think we have that courage. I don't think it is there anymore because governments breed fear. That's why they exist, because they make people afraid of this, afraid of that, afraid of something else. And I love my good old buddy, James Edwards. We've been friends a long time. But I just got to tell you, folks, anybody who thinks that a politician who lies to get elected is a good guy just doesn't make it in my not the guy, but the politician, because I do not trust politicians at all. And especially those who lie to get elected. So, and, you know, and all of the other stuff, too. And I don't believe in 5D chess. 5D chess, I'm sorry. I do not believe a person who says, let's take the guns first, due process second. I have no love of that either. But I've got a question for the group. And that is for everyone listening as well here. How much really know about the Constitution of 1787 and those who composed it? How many founders can you name? How many of them can you tell what their background was before they came to Philadelphia? Yeah, you've read books and articles and was possibly taught something about it in one of the Communist Manifesto mandated gulags we know as public school, or perhaps even at a Marxist-dominated college or university. Hey, you may even carry one of those pocket constitutions in your pocket. But when it comes to article, section, clause, and paragraph, do you know who proposed it, who opposed it at the convention, and why on both sides? Do you know how certain parts of the document were intended to reinforce other parts which had been intentionally written to provide powers to the government not mentioned in the actual wording? Now, that's tricky. You got to know your stuff to figure those out. Do you know the discussion on each part? Do you know who among the delegates wanted a monarchy just like England? Do you know the delegates who left in disgust, claiming the convention was exceeding its authority and violating the rights of the people in doing so? Can you point out all of the changes to the draft, which was approved by the Committee of the Whole, which was made surreptitiously by the Committee of the Style and Arrangement, and how that in many ways altered the central theme of what had taken almost 4 months to create? Do you know how each article, section, clause, and paragraph was debated by the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists in print and at the various state ratification conventions? Do you know the promises made by the Federalists, which have proved to be totally false? And do you know the predictions by the Anti-Federalists that this Constitution would prove fatal to freedom and rightful liberty that have all come to pass? Do you know how one of the most important ideals of those who cherish consent of the governed was demolished by one sentence in Article 3 of the Constitution? Do you know how the Constitution was written by lawyers to create a government which they would always control through the unlimited powers of the judicial branch? Do you care about any of this? Look around you. The fact most people are totally ignorant of everything I mentioned above is exactly why we are in the current mess. Let me leave you here on that thought before we take a caller with a verse from the good book, Hosea 4:6. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me. Seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will also forget thy children. Unquote. So that's my little spiel. That's my little sermon. And now we have Greg from Arkansas. Greg, how you doing today, buddy?
Real well. Thank you. As long as you're on the air, I'm doing even better. Thank you for all the great broadcasts you're doing. And I want to thank you for your speaking engagements you'd done in Harrison several years back. And I got a chance to affiliate myself with Junior Joe McCulloch. Might be mispronouncing his name. Joey McCulloch.
McCutcheon.
McCutcheon, that's it. Oh, geez, too many Micks. Anyway, I wanted to throw you in reverse for a minute. There was mention of Oregon, and I just wanted to mention something to the people. Keep a heads up in your state assemblies. Oregon's disastrous circumstances stemming from only mail-in voting. Oregon does not go to polls. Oregon does not do anything other than mail-in voting. Whether it was laziness, whether it was subterfuge, whether it was trickery or whatever by the state assembly, once their votes are placed in the mail, they have no way of going back to recounting anything. They have to trust the government to count them honestly, and that's how Oregon wound up in the mess that it's in from Eugene and Salem. And it's possible even Washington does the same thing. So just a heads up to people, keep an eye on your state legislatures, that it's possible if they try to sneak this through, it'll be the end of your state. There's no way you can tabulate votes. Not that they mean a lot, but there may be no way to tabulate them fairly.
Well, great comments there, especially, wow, from Harrison. That's been a while.
Yeah.
But here's the point I have asked people on multiple occasions, and you have a state senator there by the name of Brian King. Are you familiar with Brian?
I am not.
Well, Brian told me person to person one time. We were sitting and talking, and he said, in all my years in politics in the state of Arkansas, I don't think there's ever been an honest election.
Ah, yes, I've heard that. And I can tell you, in Arkansas, the good old boys club certainly does have a firm grip on this area. The only good thing about Arkansas is there is a lack of law enforcement. When you really need them, you can forget it. Not that you want to count on them. But when you really need them in the court systems, I've been really, really hard time with civil suits in Arkansas trying to accomplish anything. But at least the cops don't bother you. They're not up your butt everywhere you go, and there's a lack of. And out here in the boondocks, sheriff's departments are pretty decent. So that doesn't have much to do with voting, obviously, but living here in Arkansas, it is definitely different from other states I've lived in. And that's about the size of it. Just wanted to pass that past people about this voting circumstance. Not that it means a whole lot, but be careful. And that was, of course, one of the great big downfalls of the 2020 election was this adoption of mail-in voting all of a sudden. Watch out for it. It'll come back to bite you. And I thank you. Have a great show.
Oh, yes, Greg. Well, thank you, Greg. I certainly appreciate that. Appreciate you calling in to RBN. And thanks for bringing up some wonderful memories about the presentations I gave in Harrison there for about 6 months once a month on Thursdays. Thank you so very much for that.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. So you were in attendance at those?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I had little knowledge of who you were at the time, but certainly realized it once I was there. It was regular meetings we were having, ironically, at a Chinese restaurant of all places, but anyway,
yeah.
It worked out, and I'm very much appreciative, and still have your paperwork sitting on my desk, long read through, and I appreciate you even handing the paperwork out, and the organizers of it, which is Billy, I can't remember his name, it's been a year.
Bill Ray Lewis. Years now.
Yeah, Bill Ray Lewis, yes. Absolutely. Great bunch of people here in Harrison, and appreciate you doing that appearance. Thank you kindly, and have a great day.
I got a question before you go.
Sure.
Are you aware that the election in 1860, that Abraham Lincoln had somewhere between 400,000 and 600,000 non-citizens actually vote for Lincoln?
No, you're not talking certainly not just from Arkansas.
No. Lincoln wasn't even on the ballot in Arkansas.
Oh, wow.
Most people don't know that either. Lincoln was not even on the ballot in 10 southern states. His name did not appear on it, and Lincoln won the election with 39.8% of the vote, less than 40%. But even at that, there were over 500,000 Germans who were, we have the Hispanics today who are have come to the country. But the 1848ers left Europe and came to America, and over 500,000 of them voted for Lincoln with the promise that if they would do so, they could become citizens within 5 years.
Yeah, you had mentioned that on a previous broadcast that there was a trade-off for their vote.
Yes.
To vote, not being citizens. So, yeah, there's a lot of treachery out there, and obviously it's happening right under our noses, and we just have to keep pounding at them. So.
Well, all right, buddy, say hello to my friends in Harrison for me, would you please?
Okay, will do. Thank you much.
All right, buddy, have a great day. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Well, that was very pleasant. Someone had actually heard me speak in person. That's scary. But we did have some wonderful get-togethers in Harrison, Arkansas. I had get-togethers in quite a few places, Fort Smith, Fayetteville, quite a few areas, even Little Rock and other places south of Little Rock. Had a great time when I was there. Arkadelphia, even Clinton's hometown, Hope, Arkansas. Well, I gave programs there. So it was a interesting time. One of the things that has always troubled me, people, is that America, this country, as I have traveled around, has some of the finest people you will ever find anywhere. But the government sucks. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's state government or federal government. All government is evil. Because all government is headed for the same thing. They want to control everyone's life. You know, the wonderful thing about the people who cherish rightful liberty is they just want to be left the hell alone. Leave me alone. Let me succeed. Let me fail. Let me do this on my own. Just stay out of my way. That's rightful liberty. No one who cherishes rightful liberty ever wants to run for political office because it's alien to their entire philosophy. If you understand the definition of rightful liberty, if you understand it, then there is no way a person who accepts rightful liberty would ever say, you know, well, I think I want to run for office because I want to tell people what to do. It's just not there. And I know it's really tough when we start looking at government and people are saying, oh, well, what are we going to put in place of it? I don't know. If you have leukemia, would you prefer cancer or a heart attack? They're all deadly. And history tells us over and over and over again, if you're a student of history, which makes me think of Marcus Tullius Cicero, who said very poignantly that a people who are ignorant of their own history shall remain forever children. Think of that. Look around you today. Do you see any adults anywhere? Or are they all acting like they are junior high students? And that is the very purpose of government. If we go back to the school system that was founded by the three nonprofit organizations, funded, not founded, by the three nonprofit organizations, Ford, Rockefeller, Carnegie, they put millions of dollars into the education system. John D. Rockefeller said, we don't need entrepreneurs. We need workers. The school system was designed to create workers for the wealthy aristocracy of the country. It was not designed to create super intelligent people. I mean, I think I read Thomas Sowell not too long ago, and Thomas Sowell is a brilliant man, happens to be black, but he's brilliant. But he's made the statement so many times in some of his books that is so relevant about the issues that we face today. He's just a brilliant man. Read some of his books. It is just amazing. But when we talk about government, government has never been good. Look at history and tell me a benevolent government. And then, you know, we think that we're really going to make a change. We're really going to change things if we elect someone. Well, I don't know, folks. If the mafia says, okay, we're opening up our hitman for election, you can elect the hitman you want. Do you think if you got to vote for the hitman for the mafia, that you could change the mafia? What about a drug cartel? Do you think you could change them? But we continue to believe that if we put the right person in government, you know, if we can just get the right person there, everything will just be fine. Well, it's never happened. We have never been able to do that. And ironically, I wrote an article about that, about, wow, let me see, it's 2023. I wrote an article about that about 18 years ago, I think. No, wait a minute. It's been less than that. But here's a quote from Robert Lefay, and I want you to think about this. Government is an agency of force which can and must be employed against every deviationist. And this is only to say again that the government must always oppose the individual. Therefore, the good man in government is like a priest with a machine gun. The mechanism does the harm. The man who operates it merely pulls the trigger. unquote. Every 2 years in this country, there exists a mania we call elections where those involved in the electoral process work endless hours and spend billions of dollars in an effort to put good men and women into elected office. This, each person believes, will improve or change the government apparatus, and everyone will be better served. This is analogous to believing that if one could place the right person on my Harley Davidson, it would perform the task of a dump truck. The machine we call government can only accomplish that which it was designed to do. All governments in their evolutionary process eventually turn on their progenitors. The machine eventually rules the individual, no matter what safeguards have been put in place. Nowhere is that more evident than where we are today in this country. People, we are in deep trouble. And that is because everything we look at, James gave us some great listings of the problems that are going on in this country. You can lay at the feet of government as the source of all of these problems. Government creates so many more problems than they ever fix. And government is a law factory. And how many people even stop to think about that? Oh, yes, we have legislatures. Yes, every 2 years we elect these new people. They come in and they write more laws. At what point in time do you get to the place where you have so many laws you have no freedom? We're there. And let's think about what Thomas Jefferson said about that. He said, "The law is often nothing but the tyrant's will, and always so when it opposes the rights of an individual." And as I just said, the greatest enemy to government is an individual. If you're not participating in groupthink, if you haven't put yourself in a category, if you haven't made yourself a Republican or a Democrat, if you haven't made yourself this, that, or the other, it's just that individuality. Individuality and rightful freedom are the only answers to the situation we have. Secession, I believe in totally, but I believe in secession from government, state and federal. Because, again, state governments, every one that I've ever been in, is just as crooked as any others. I have a very good friend, a preacher in Colorado, probably one of the finest men I've ever known in my life, and he told me that he had lived in that county for over half a century, and he said, "Unfortunately, we've never had an honest sheriff." The system is designed. The system wants, who wants to have power and control over others? Sociopaths and psychopaths. That's why we have these problems. Because those are the people who want power over others. I think it was Thomas Jefferson said, "The best man for any public office is the man who doesn't want it." Stop and give that some thought. Well, folks, I tell you what, the past 2 hours have just been a ton of fun. I really enjoy always talking with my good friend James Edwards. And he, if you get a chance, he's got a program called The Political Cesspool. It will come on tonight in the Eastern from 7 to 10 Eastern. Give him a listen because he's doing Confederate History Month, especially if you are a good Confederate and you believe in the sacrifices of the South. And he mentioned these monuments and that are being torn down. Here is something I don't think people have stopped and thought about. In 1861, in the South, men picked up, left their families, left their homes, left everything to go fight against. And if you read their own literature, they don't mention they were fighting for slavery. They were fighting against the Yankee aggressor who was moving into their country. how many of those men went off to battle who never came home again? How many of their lifeless bodies were buried somewhere unknown, or maybe not even buried at all? That is the reason that the South wanted those monuments. The people of the South wanted monuments to their loved ones who never returned, who never came home. That's what those monuments were for, so that they could be honored, and they felt like they should be honored. What is wrong in a country where we cannot honor that emotion? And the United States government has declared that the Southern soldiers were veterans. So if you love veterans, why do you hate Southern veterans? Why would you hate the people who were willing to leave their homes, their families, their loved ones, to go off to fight against an aggressor? Why would you hate them? They didn't own slaves. The great majority of them owned no slaves at all. Why would you not honor their memories? And there's one that is buried in Lexington, Virginia. His name is Levi Miller. If you ever get a chance to go to Lexington, Virginia, the home of Virginia Military Institute and Washington and Lee University, go down to the Green Cemetery. Walk into that cemetery and you will find a monument to Levi Miller, a Confederate veteran, a decorated Confederate veteran who received a Confederate pension. How many know that Levi Miller was black? How many people know that the head of the Sanitary Commission said that when he saw Stonewall Jackson's army marching through Winchester, Virginia, there were between 3,000 and 6,000 blacks with Thomas Jefferson? And he said they had all of the same accoutrements, they had all of the same uniforms, weaponry, everything else as the white soldiers. That was a Yankee officer who said that. Well, folks, love you. Love everyone. Appreciate everyone tuning in. And there, the last rebel. Thank you for tuning in to Rebel Madman Radio. And folks, help out Republic Broadcasting to keep the truth flowing. God bless you all. See you next week.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit RepublicBroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.